agenda, public hearing on Senate Bill 5526, the Oregon State Marine Board. Please note that Representative Clam and Senator Vaucian have both called in saying that they will be 15 to 20 minutes late. And since this is a hearing only, we actually don't need a quorum on both from both chambers. So. Is there something to start with, Mr.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to call your attention to a memo that I placed at your site, your work site. This is just a history of the agency's programs, revenues, and expenditures. The first chart on the form in the memo shows that the progression of the agency's expenditures by program area, and points out that before the fees were increased in 2003-05, their program expenses were beginning to decline, particularly in the facility grant area, which is kind of their pressure valve. When their revenues reduce, that's where they reduce most of their budget so that they can preserve their other programs and the agency. And then the second chart in the memo is then replaced by this chart. There's a little mistake in there. They didn't quite add up to 100% because of a formula error in my worksheet, so I've redone it. But this is, again, displays the same thing, only by program area. And then the third chart is the revenues, showing that federal revenues have increased 119% since 2003-05, while their other revenues remained pretty stable. And I believe the federal revenues, given the current situation in Washington, D.C., are starting to decline. I'm not sure about Coast Guard grants, but you can talk to them about that. And there are no real major policy issues to discuss on this budget. There's just a matter of balancing where they're going to spend their resources. The performance measures can be found on page 18 under the agency summary. There were no budget notes, reports, or special audits. And the emergency board actions during the interim are under the tab called Legislative Actions on page 8. So with that, I'll introduce Mr. Don Hefner, who is the director of the Marine Board.
Does this replace something in our notebook, or it's in addition?
This is in addition, and the agency will talk to
them. Mr. Hefner, please start. We had a brief presentation from you before, so I assume we're going into the normal routine that we go into for an agency coming back a second time. And I think we'll have public testimony tomorrow. I don't think we can have public testimony today unless any of the parties...
public here, members of public.
One thing as you go through your presentation that I'd like you to comment on later is that your federal revenues obviously are showing significant increases, but most of your other revenues appear to be relatively, well, not necessarily flat, but not particularly increasing at any level in proportion to what I think your underlying costs might be increasing. They just seem to be relatively, I would compare them to actually like, because they're related to that, our regular transportation dollars. Or they're not a revenue source, or tobacco taxes. They're not a revenue source that's growing at a fairly comparable rate to how expenses are growing. So.
Okay, we can do that.
Please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Don Hefner, Director of the Marine Board. With me this morning is Lisa Pearson with the Office of Budget Management. I'd also like to introduce Hillary Crew, who is our fiscal officer in the agency, and I'd like to commend her for coming in here with two sprained ankles and a broken wrist. And Randy Henry, our policy and program analyst. Yeah, we'd like to pick up where we left off after our overview last week. And if you'll indulge me, I'm going to use my low-tech charts here to continue. And these are the same as the handout that you have in front of you that's titled 2007-2009 government budget.
actually in some ways this is somewhat refreshing.
I want to know, how do you print off the printer on that?
In our facility program, we have a plotter.
Okay, so it's done on a
plotter.
Yeah, I was thinking you either that for CAD or
But
it's nice that they can see it on.
We'll jump into it then. And this may address the point that you just made, Mr. Chairman, with regard to federal funds. We'll talk about other funds, too. In terms of key budget drivers and issues, as your staff has noted, one of the key budget drivers is an increase in federal funds, $3.4 million in new federal fund revenue, a 68% increase over our last budget. This is driven by the reauthorization of the Highway Trust Fund a couple years back. We got a significant increase in Coast Guard grant funding. These are dedicated funds that come from federal motor boat fuel tax and the excise tax on sport fishing tackle and other things like that. They're in a trust fund. That is a big driver on the law enforcement and education side. And then along with that reauthorization was reauthorization of a program known as the Boating Infrastructure Grants Program. This is through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That's for facilities to accommodate large non-trailerable boats, destination tie-ups and things like that, along with the Clean Vessel Act, CVA. The big program is a national competitive grant program, and Oregon's been very successful over the last couple of cycles in competing for these nationwide grants to put in large transient facilities, and we've installed them in the Portland metropolitan area, up and down the Columbia River and in the Willamette system. We've put in several of these facilities, and we have several that are in this next 07-09 budget, so that's one of the big drivers. The federal funds drive three of our policy option packages, 101, 201, 301. These are primarily federal funds that go for law enforcement contracts in 201 and for facility projects under BIG and CBA in 301. 97% of this additional funding is being passed back through to local governments for either law enforcement contracts or facility improvements. Only 3% is earmarked for education and the voting safety within the agency's program itself. The other fund key drivers, we have $750,000 in package 304. This is to continue an enhanced level of boating facility grants with other funds. It was approved in the last budget session as a one-time because we didn't know if the revenues would be sustainable. And indeed, the revenues are, we do believe they are sustainable. And so that program was phased out. We're asking that it be phased back in as package 304. And then we have another driver, $250,000 in limitation without revenue necessarily to carry forward projects in package 302. This is a new package, and it's to try to help us bridge the gap between bienniums with facility projects that don't get completed by June 30th of the fiscal year. So the projects that have been awarded, they're underway, but we need to continue them a little longer, and so we're looking for some limitations so that we can extend those projects into the next biennium without canceling them, reverting the funds, and then having to reauthorize them, set them up again, but count them against future grant limitations. And then finally, we have three position reclassification packages that were reviewed by DAS during the interim for jobs and duties, and those drive three of our POPs, 103, 203, and 303. So those are kind of the key budget drivers from a high-level point of view. In terms of other fund revenues, and I'll talk about this a little further in here, but they are essentially stable. There was an increase in fuel tax collections and some increase in mandatory education fees and other things, but I guess the good news is that these revenues have been stable. While they're not growing anywhere near our federal funds, they have been stable. there are no questions on drivers, then I'd like to just move to key performance measurements and go over some of those. Okay. So we'll go through, these are our legislatively approved agency performance measures. The first one is in our law enforcement program. It's the number of voter safety examinations conducted by our law enforcement providers. These are based on their reports to us as part of their contracts. Our target for 2005 was 32,250. Our actual was 29,314, so we're a little short of that target. That number has been fairly consistent since 2003. Part of it's driven by, you know, more patrol, more hours on the water, results in more contacts, more examinations, and ultimately we believe more safety. But we are short of that target, so that's something we need to continue to work on. That's driven in part two, that we're connected to measure number two, the number of boat patrol hours conducted on the water. And our target for that in 2005 was 32,500. Our actual was 33,414. So we exceeded that target somewhat. And our standards with our contracts require that at least 50% of their patrol hours be spent on the water. That's where we want them to be, out there making contact, serving the public, taking care of things. And so we're pleased to see that we've achieved that target for that, that year's data. Moving to number three, this is number of boat operators arrested for boating under the influence. Our target is 250. We're short of that target in the last cycle, 147 actual in 2005. We've got ongoing campaigns and efforts to target boat operators for BUI with education and enforcement. We've recently replaced a number of field testing breathalyzer units with a new, more sophisticated evidentiary unit that they carry in the field. They can test people when they're stopped in the field. They don't have to haul them to a central precinct in order to test their breath for alcohol. So we're expecting that we'll see an uptick in that. We're also enhancing our training of Marine law enforcement officers so that they can detect and apprehend people for DUI. So we have room to grow in that one. Measure four is our boating fatalities per 100,000 registered boats. We've got a lot of different kinds of water, north and ranging from the ocean to the rivers and lakes. Our target for that is 7. Our actual was 8, so we're not achieving our target in that. There were higher fatalities in 2005 due to hazardous water conditions. We have started some targeted campaigns that have had some success on coastal bars, most notably the Columbia River bar, but others as well, where we've been working with the Coast Guard to install low-powered AM radios and flashing signs to warn people about hazardous bar warning conditions. We're proud of our partnership with the Coast Guard on that project to try to educate people about Oregon's hazardous coastal bars. And non-registered boats have been a part of the problem with that fatality number. They don't count as registered boats, but they do count as part of the fatalities. And in the last several years, we've had a number of non-motorized fatalities on our rivers, particularly the Deschutes. Last year was a very bad year on the Deschutes. There were 6 fatalities on the Deschutes. That's not counted in this 2005 data, but it does reflect that there are a lot of non-motorized fatalities that affect this. They're not counted as a part of the registered registered boats, but they do count against the fatalities. And Oregon has traditionally been above the national average in terms of fatalities, although we're lower on a per capita basis with Washington, quite a bit lower than Washington. We have been higher, and that is due in part to the hazardous water conditions that we have here. Despite safety programs, when you have cold water, rivers, and the Pacific Ocean, it's a formula that it's hard to overcome for reducing fatalities. Number five deals with our relatively new mandatory education program. This is the percentage of inspected voters who were in compliance with it, and we're pleased to report that we're ahead of our target on that. Our target is 80%, and we believe we have 85% compliance with that program, which is among the highest compliance rates in the country for programs that states that are implementing mandatory education. There are about 35 or so states that have some form of mandatory voter education, and Oregon is a leader in that program. Recently, the state of Washington adopted a program that is almost essential to, or almost identical to, Oregon's law for mandatory education. California has come up to visit us and glean information about our program. Other states have looked at it as a model as well. And so I think we're doing well with that program, and the fact that the compliance is high is something that we're proud of. The next area of performance measures move into the facility program. Quality access for voters. And this next one relates to the Clean Vessel Act and the number of gallons of waste sewage that are not deposited in Oregon waterways as a result of pumped out facilities and floating restrooms. Our 2006 target was 453,000 gallons, and the actual amount was over 630,000 gallons that were removed from or prevented from entering waterways potentially. So we're well ahead of that target. We continue to make use of federal funds to install pump-out dump stations as well as floating restrooms around the state. The next one, number seven, is the relates to the ratio of matching funds from other sources to our state voting grant dollars. Our target for this is $2 of match for every dollar that we expend, and in our 2005 actual was $1.90 for every dollar that we grant out. So almost 2 to 1, and we're proud of the leverage that the fact that for every dollar we spend, we're able to capture almost $2 in other funds from either local sources, federal funds, or other agency expenditures. So the more leverage we can put into our program, the further our dollars go in expanding public access through ramps, restrooms, facilities, and things like that. So we're real close to that target. The next area moves into customer service in the facilities area. Number eight is the number of days that it takes us to turn around a grant from board approval of the grant to having a grant agreement, a final cooperative grant agreement with the local provider. Our target for that in 2005 was 45 days. Our actual was 41 days. So we're able to get those grants processed from board approval to giving them the green light to proceed within 41 days on average. And the next one is the number of days it takes us to turn around payments on the other end of the grant cycle. Once they submit a billing to us for reimbursement, the number of days it takes us to actually pay them, our target is 4 days, and we pay them in less than 2. So, and I think by most accounts for local governments, that's an extraordinary turnaround time for getting reimbursed once you've submitted your paperwork for something. So we're proud of that. Measure 10 relates to customer service rankings for satisfaction with our services. This was a new standard that was developed at the end of the last budget cycle, I believe, for all agencies, and it deals with customer service. We did a customer service survey, and we broke that down into a number of subcomponents because we have a number of different customers and stakeholders. So we surveyed agents, we surveyed boat owners, we surveyed local government providers, we surveyed sheriffs, we surveyed guides, all the different types of stakeholder groups that we have outreach with and interaction with as customers. We broke those down and did a number of subsets of surveys to come up with this. So what we did for reporting this was give you the aggregate of those. We brought those back up to the overall ratings, and we did it in a number of areas. Our overall customer satisfaction, the timeliness of our services, the accuracy of our services, the helpfulness of our staff, the staff's expertise or people's rating of their expertise, and the availability of information from the agency. And our overall rating, our target was 95% satisfaction. We were at 93% overall. Timeliness of our services, again, our target was 95. We hit 94.4, so almost right on that. The accuracy of the information and services that we provide, our target's 95. Our actual was 93, so we've got some room for improvement on that. The helpfulness of our staff, our target was 95. The actual was 98.7, so our staff are considered quite helpful by the people that they provide service to. The expertise of the staff, our target was 95. The actual was 96, so we're helpful and well-informed, it would appear. And the availability of information, our target was 95, and the actual was 91.4. So some room for improvement on the availability of information to the public. But overall, I think those are relatively high marks for the agency. And much more to say about that.
We'll go to questions now since you're done with the performance.
Performance measures are done.
Yes. Representative Gerard and then Representative Burley and then Representative Dinkel.
Representative Burley and I may have the same question, so I'll leave to Representative Burley. Well,
thank you. First of all, I wanted to say, Mr. Chair, that in my other life, the one where I make some real money, I had the pleasure of working with Mr. Don Hefner for a couple years on some issues regarding the Lower Deschutes, and I just want to say that I very much appreciate his reasoned and rational approach to problem solving. It was a real pleasure working with you for those 2 years, even though my clients didn't get the answer they wanted out of it, but nevertheless, things went very well. I'd like you to discuss a little bit more these two performance measures. I'm not quite sure on the BUII, if we target 250, but we have less than that, is that good or bad? I'm not quite sure I'm following how this works.
If it's thought to be a big problem, then I think it's a rational target. But I'll just
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley. That's the BUI could be a two-edged thing because if we're trying hard and we're not finding very many, that's a good thing because it would tend to indicate that people are not drinking and boating. And there is, in some areas of the state, anecdotal evidence to suggest that. As well as real evidence in the fact that the number of alcohol-related fatalities has dropped in the last 10 years, both at Oregon and across the country. The number of those fatalities has been on the decline. That's probably due to a combination of things, in part to education campaigns to make people aware of the dangers of drinking and boating. We probably get some spin off of highway programs that do the same thing and a general, you know, societal awareness of those issues, as well as enforcement and having a presence out there at the right time and the right place to catch people. Nevertheless, we also believe that there is still quite a fair amount of drinking that's going on out there. As evidenced by the fact that some counties in the state are experiencing a fair number of BUIs, which, all things being equal, there's no reason for us to think that voters in one particular county are drinking any more than elsewhere. It's the fact that their officers are either more aggressive or better trained, and they're at detecting and arresting them. So there's some county programs where the number of arrests are few or none, and others where we have a number of them. So it's not the enforcement pattern suggests that there is more drinking and boating going on out there, but we're not catching it in all counties, in part because of training issues and a local commitment to dealing with it. So it is out there.
Follow up. I guess, it seems like an odd, for lack of a better term, I guess, sort of an odd the performance measure. I mean, it, you know, to me, I look at these performance measures. First of all, they need to be things that your department has some control over, you know, because you're measuring your department's performance. And a lot of the BUI is, unfortunately, beyond your control. You know, you can control the education programs. You can control the amount of enforcement that's being done. But you can't control if in any one year you've got 100 people out there drinking and boating or 10,000 people drinking and boating. That's not your control. So I guess I kind of struggle with a performance measure like that. I'll have to take some time to digest and think about it some more. And if I may follow up with another one on the fatalities, and probably not quite so much on the performance measure, but more in the sense of, as you pointed out last year, we had very high level of fatalities, unfortunately, on the lower Deschutes River. We had 6 of them. And I'm curious what your department's thoughts are about that and how you are addressing that matter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, well, as you and I have discussed, I think last year on the Deschutes was an abnormal year. In the 10 prior years, we'd had 1 fatality on the Deschutes, and to suddenly have 6, statistically, it was kind of an aberration, we believe. And hopefully we don't see a repeat of that. But nonetheless, we are working with the Bureau of Land Management and some of the other local stakeholders over there to ramp up our education efforts. We had a meeting or a phone call with them last week, and we're going to be organizing a working group to get some signs and other information to people at launch sites to kind of try to target that and raise awareness about the importance of wearing life jackets. Unfortunately, last year on the Deschutes, I think 3 or maybe even 4 of the fatalities involved people that actually were wearing life jackets, but they were either trapped or the life jacket came off because of white water and other things. So even a campaign to have more people wearing them isn't necessarily going to guarantee success in all circumstances. It was a bad year over there, and one that we hope we don't see repeated.
Just to follow up with Representative Burley, how do you intertwine and work with local entities in regards to boating under the influence? I know if the river runs through the city, can the city also enforce? Could you explain that very briefly for me?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Girard, to answer the second part, local municipalities can enact their own ordinances on open container or drinking in particular areas, and I think the city of Bend did that because of some accidents they had over there in the last couple of years, and they can enforce those. But for the most part, we contract with county sheriffs as well as state police for on-water patrol, and to facilitate their efforts at DUI, we provide them with the breathalyzer equipment that they use in the field. We certify and calibrate that equipment under a contract that we have. We provide them with BUI training because it is slightly different than driving under the influence. There's no yellow lines out there. You can't observe everyone's weaving on the waterway. So it takes a different skill set to try to detect impaired operators on the waterway. The field sobriety tests that you use on the waterway are different than you might apply on the highway. You can't have somebody walking the line out in the middle of the lake. So there are
easier to get rid of the evidence.
So we do work very closely with them in terms of training and as well as trying to coordinate certain saturation patrols. We get a couple of different counties working together on busy weekends at particular locations to try to target that kind of a problem. So those are some of the examples of the ways that we work with those with our contract providers. To
comment, Mr. Chair, I have a tendency to agree with Representative Burley that with all these extraneous forces involved in these issues, that this perhaps needs to be reevaluated in that you just don't have, it's not a fair measure of the effectiveness of the department.
Thank you. And this is partially a follow-up to Representative Burley's question. And I spend a bit of time, I'm a kayaker and rafter, so I spend a bit of time on our rivers and on the coast. And I unfortunately often see people without life jackets, and was on the Deschutes actually 2 years ago, you know, in a relatively flat part of the river, but, you know, often see it's pretty typical to see the children wearing life jackets and not the parents, which sort of reminds me of cyclists who don't wear helmets and their kids do. Sends the wrong message. But with that said, do you find people who don't have life jackets on? And by the way, the sheriff did come by and just wanted to make sure. But I was curious to see, is that as far as the safety card? I mean, how does that work? So if somebody, not you, but law enforcement, do they find somebody or they just give them a warning? Or what do we do to make sure and not, you know, reinforce?
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, officers do check for life jackets, and it's one of the number one warnings and citations that are issued. If they find people with no PFDs whatsoever, generally that's a citation. However, except for children, there's no requirement that it actually be worn, so it needs to be carried in the vessel, but it doesn't have to be worn. And so as long as people can produce one, it's readily accessible. They're in compliance with the law. We haven't quite gotten to the point yet of mandatory PFD wear. I don't believe there's quite a bit of debate about that among the states, whether we should go there. Currently, it's mandatory for children ages 12 and under, and that's been very successful. But whether we're ready to step across the boundary into making all adults wear them at all times or only certain times under certain conditions, that's something that's still up for debate.
Just a quick follow-up. I realize that it's not mandatory. However, oftentimes, I know the Deschutes was sort of a unique year, but it seems more often than not that a lot of fatalities are linked to people not wearing their life preservers, PFDs.
That's true.
Sort of common sense, but okay. Well, I will say the sheriff gave out ice cream, little ice cream coupons to all the kids on our rock, so they really appreciate that.
The white hat they wear.
Yeah.
I had a few questions. In terms of the contracts that you have or the your agreements with law enforcement agencies, how many such agreements do you have? How are they negotiated, and what are they based on in terms of, are they based on the actual costs that the law enforcement agency has or an average cost?
Mr. Chairman, we have 32 contracts with counties. The ones that are not covered are some of the drier counties like Grant, Wheeler, Grant, Wheeler, Lake, and Gilliam are the four counties that are not covered. Some of those are covered by the adjoining counties or by Oregon State Police contracts. We also have a contract with State Police. Contracts are based on their actual costs. They are, first and foremost, we try to base our contracts on boating use within that jurisdiction. Every 3 years, by law, we do a statewide survey of boating use, and that gives us a snapshot of where people are actually using their boats in the state. So that's a big factor in trying to establish these contracts based on where people are going, because most people live in the valley, but they play in Central Oregon, for example, or on the coast. So it's based on where people actually use them. It's also based on the number of bodies of water that they've got, the geographic diversity within the county. Some counties like Lane have coast all the way from the coast to the Cascades in terms of enforcement. Others have, in the case of, for example, Washington County, Hag Lake primarily is the lake where they patrol, so they don't have to travel great distances. So a number of those different factors are used to establish those contracts. They're on an annual basis, and we reimburse them for their actual expenses. And they do have to provide a match.
On the fatalities, those fatalities would not include commercial fishing, commercial tourist-related, like deep-sea fishing and whale watching, and any whale watching fatalities, and would not include drownings that are not associated with boating. Correct? And all
correct.
Those. Okay. In the fatalities we have, and given your statistics from last year, and a lot of them occurring on the Deschutes, and us many of us being aware of some of those because they were there, they were publicized widely in the state. Do we analyze fatalities that occur? I mean, do we do extensive investigations to try to determine, you know, what happened, how it could be avoided?
Chairman, one of our programs is a boating accident investigation and reporting program. Generally, the local providers do the local investigation on it. They report that to us. In turn, our data and analysis is in turn reported to the Coast Guard as part of a national reporting system on boating fatalities. And nationwide, it's in the 600 range. And these are recreational only. They don't include charter boat accidents, guide accidents, commercial fishing, or anything that would be related commercially, commercial fishing, crabbing, and that. We do study accidents to try to learn the causes and to try to develop interventions as best we can to try to avoid future accidents. Life jackets are one of the key factors in boating, recreational boating fatalities. 85% of the time, they're simply not worn.
Like many accidents, last year may have been an aberration, but in previous years, how often do you believe boating under the influence was a factor? Is it probably not as prevalent as it is in automobile fatalities, but is it a significant factor in your fatalities?
Mr. Chairman, back in the 70s and 80s, over 60% of all fatalities were alcohol-related. We believe today that we have that under 30% alcohol-related. So we think we've made headway in that, and as I said, there's a variety of factors for that. I don't think we want to claim credit for all of it. Some of it's a general societal awareness of the dangers of operating under the influence and that. But recreational boating is that it's recreational, and so many people discard, the wisdom that they might have driving down the highway. They wouldn't think twice about drinking and driving, but they go out to recreate, and now we're playing. And so suddenly, having beer in the boat and drinking, or even being a passenger in a vessel and drinking, puts one at risk because many accidents involve falls overboard. And so it's not simply that you need a sober operator in the boat. If the passengers are under the influence, they're also at risk of either capsizing or falls overboard or falling down, injuring themselves or doing something otherwise stupid that they wouldn't do but for the fact that they're under the influence.
Any additional questions? Seeing none at this point, I guess we'll go on to agency-wide priorities.
Well, we've got these agency-wide priorities color-coded, and part of them are based on the state statute and mandate that after the cost of administration, our first priorities are for marine law enforcement. And following that, any funds remaining are used for boating facilities. So we take our lead from the statute in terms of proposing these priorities. The first two are in our registration and administration area, program area. The next two, by statute, relate to our law enforcement, administration, and contract. Then we put education and the abandoned boat program, 5 and 6, and finally our facility program with the facility administration and facility grant. So it's a rather straightforward depiction of priorities, and it's largely driven by what the statute tells us to do.
Yes,
may I, Mr. Chair? Thank you. I guess in light of our conversation we just had about safety and fatalities last year, why does education, it seems to me, ought to be a little bit higher on the priority list?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley. I suppose you're right, but because safety is really our number one mission, the safety of the public on our waterways, perhaps that one should be higher. And I guess if we were at a point where we were, negotiating to make major cuts in this budget and reducing or eliminating programs, perhaps that would rise higher.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Just by way of remarks, your abandoned boats, one of my routines is to go to marinas on the coast and look for sailboats. And one of these days, I'm going to actually buy one of these and come home, and then someone's not going to talk to me for probably 6 months.
You'll have a lot of new friends in us, and trade is fair or not.
Well, every marina that you go to that has sailboats will have at least one or two that look like no one has actually been on them in 5 years. With a faded for sale sign that
you can, if you find an orphan, that's one thing, but please don't find one that's abandoned.
Yeah. Okay. I guess we can go on.
Okay. Moving beyond that, this is a mandatory page for the reductions that the agency would take based on Bill 3182. To reduce current service levels by 10% for each fund type. And if we were to make these cuts, we would be reducing facilities by $2.5 million, facilities by another $858,000 for a total reduction of $3.3 million that would then be in our ending balance. So, having complied with that, and then move on to revenues and expenditures. And here we discussed this briefly before. Registration revenue, we expect little or no growth over the current level, but it is expected to meet our projections.
Chair, I'm sorry. May I go back to your previous page for just a second?
Yeah.
I know that you're doing what you've been asked to do through the House bill, but this information is meaningless to me with respect to what it does to your programs. To take an artificial, which is not a criticism of the House, but an artificial measurement of cut and then impose it on yourself and then move it to your ending balance. I don't know what that does with respect to the mission that you are charged by other statutes to fulfill. Could you comment on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Vaughan. So taking $3 million out of the facility program would reduce our grant aid to local governments for projects such as ramps, restrooms, and the like. So it would be passing that kind of a reduction on to local governments. That would be the bottom line for that.
Do you have any idea whether or not local governments would be able to backfill that and still make sure the public gets what they need, or do those things just go undone? And with the money, if I may, one more. The money then increasing your ending balance, how does that serve you? How does that benefit you?
It doesn't benefit the agency, and it doesn't benefit the public. It carried forward and result in a bigger beginning balance in the next budget cycle.
Or amend the statute and take the ending balance.
Correct.
Senator Vaughan, if they took the ending balance that was generated from some of those fees, there would be a lot of angry voters.
I'm sure there would, but I'm just saying all of those options are legally permissible if we chose to. I'm just trying to track where the money ends up and how it benefits Oregonians. So, okay, that's all I needed. Thank you.
One of the things about that bill, obviously, and it obviously passed both chambers, is that, you know, in this case, it looks rather straightforward, and I don't think anyone would question where you would make the cuts, given your requirements for law enforcement, your requirements for registration. But in larger agencies, what we sometimes see, and it is partially an exercise, sometimes you see fairly credible breakdowns of items in that 10%. Other times you see things being offered that they know that the legislature would not cut. So it is more of an exercise than anything else. But it does actually, I think, aid in the discussion when you get to larger agencies. I guess we can go on to the next item now.
So registration stable, new targets, federal aid I mentioned at the beginning is a big driver, and that's increasing as a result of the reauthorization of the highway fund and the transportation programs. And Coast Guard funding is projected at $4.3 million for the next budget cycle. Clean Vessel Act and the big program are going to generate about $4.2 million in the next budget. Our other minor sources, we register guides and outfitters. We have late fees. There's no changes there. Voter education fees are expected to generate about $450,000. And the other big leg of our revenue stream is state motor boat fuel taxes. We did another mandated survey last year, and they're expected to bring in about 11.1, which is up slightly from the prior transfer amounts. So those are the assumptions we use for revenue. And then getting into the detail of it, registration, mandatory education fees, in the next budget cycle we'll be bringing in $12.8 million, state marine fuel tax, $11.1 million, and CBA big and Coast Guard combined, $8.5 million. In federal funds. So the federal funds are the blue bar, state marine fuel tax is the red bar, and then our other funds, registration fees and all other combined are the green bar for the next budget cycle. So the real big change is in the federal fund column. Further assumptions on revenue that we'll be able to maintain our 05-07 essential budget levels for all programs within existing revenues. I mentioned the statutory priority that after the cost of administration, our highest priorities are for law enforcement and voting safety. And this in part is why number five was voting safety, but it could have been higher up. Our maintenance assistance program for the facility program will be maintained at current levels, and we'll have revenue available to fund all the various policy option packages that we've presented to you, 101 through 103, 201 and 203, and then the three, four in the facilities program, 301 through 304.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt, but before we get into the expenditures too much, Paul, I guess if you flip back one, please, to the revenues. I'm trying to... Senator Avakian's question about the facility cuts under House Bill 3182, how does that relate to the blue bar here? In other words, the
blue bar is federal funds.
Federal revenues.
So it would not impact on federal revenues.
But
it would affect the it would be affecting the red and green bars. I mean, we'd be reducing other fund expenditures.
Mr. Chair, it would have some effect because it's also, you use your other funds to match the federal funds unless it's 100%.
Well, that's where I was trying to get at. So the 3182 cuts, 10% reduction, would have some effect on the blue bar because of the matching aspects.
Yeah, okay. Depending upon where the agency reduced the programs.
So then, if I may, Mr. Chair,
yes.
The blue bar, does that reflect the 3182 reductions or not? It does not. Okay. Thank you.
I ask another question.
Yeah.
Okay. Last session, I know we had a fee, approved a fee increase. I think, was it 0305 or 0507? I'm trying to think.
0305.
Okay. And so I sat through those hearings, but I'm wondering if you have anywhere in here the history of your fees and fee increases over time. That's something I'd like to see if you can. And then the other is, do you tie them to CPI, or is it you have to come back here every time for approval?
I don't believe we've got a fee history in the budget document. I can get you some additional details on that. In 2003, the fee schedule for registrations went from a staggered level of fees where no two paying the same amount, and it went to a flat fee of $3 per foot for 2 years. And that was the only change that we've made to our fee schedule since the mid-80s, I believe, when there was a $5 across-the-board fee that was applied back in the mid-80s. Our fees are not tied to the CPI, so anytime the agency wants to come in for a any kind of fee change on title fees or registration fees, that has to be enacted by the legislature. Now, I might add that we do have a bill in the House Transportation Committee currently dealing with the agent service charge. This is the service charge that our bonded agents can charge. That committee is interested in moving that from a fixed fee to one that is adjusted to the CPI. And they've directed that amendments be drafted to that effect. It's currently a dollar. We were proposing $2.50. The fee hadn't changed since 1975. The CPI was likely to be like $3.75 now. The committee said, well, why don't we just link it to the CPI, and then you'll have to get back to us every time you want to raise it by 50 cents.
Please proceed.
And I want a follow-up question on the federal revenues. Do you have a sense, I heard at the beginning that you think they may be going down, but do you have any sense as far as projecting out several biennia? I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, if we have a drop in federal revenue, obviously we're going to have to look at other ways to backfill that funding, and so you know, you only have two other places you can look, and I don't think you have a lot of control over the fuel tax either. So do you have a sense as far as the trend for federal funds?
With reauthorization of the trust fund a couple of years back, we received stable funding for a number of years, and we changed a big problem that we had with the way those funds were used to be scored against the Coast Guard budget. And so every year we were in a fight between the administration and the Coast Guard and getting our state funds. That was changed. That was fixed in the reauthorization. So our funds no longer score against the Coast Guard. We're now partners once again. And so our budget, our federal funds don't impact on them. So I think it's looking good for that to continue to increase. There are projected slight increases in that, you know, federal funding over time. Of course, it'll need to be reauthorized when the time comes, but it looks good. And the other big component of this is CVA and BIG, which CVA is part of its allocated to the states. Part of it's competitive. Big is all is virtually all competitive. If we don't get big funds, we don't do big projects. It's that simple. So the
truth in advertising,
right, exactly.
Here.
So
we wouldn't be seeking to backfill those kinds of funds if we were not successful in obtaining them. It's scalable depending on what we obtain.
For a final question on the federal clean vessel, is that what exactly is that used for? And I'm curious about there's a lot of concern about with that ballast exchange. And I didn't know if that's your jurisdiction, that's strictly the Coast Guard.
Well, Chairman, has nothing to do with ballast exchange. The Clean Vessel Act is used to put in pump out stations, dump stations, and floating restrooms so that people have holding tanks on their boats. They can pump that effluent into a sewer system.
That's not, the ballast exchange is not your purview. That's
not
strictly
our
Coast Guard.
Right.
Thank you.
Representative Barrett.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, that fee increases that are automatic with no sunset are not a good idea.
That's just a comment. So.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rod, we went into the House Transportation Committee simply asking to change it, that fee to $250. And we were surprised that the wind was blowing in a different direction, and they said, no, we don't want you coming back every time you want to adjust this, so we want an amendment to make it tied to the CPI. You never know which
just different
which
opinions.
Which direction.
I'll go with the wind.
Yeah, I usually try to. I usually try not to fight it.
Any additional questions? Please proceed.
Talked about our expenditure assumptions, and then high-level look at expenditures. Green is our administration education program area. We have three program areas, as I explained before, for our budget: administration, education, law enforcement, and facilities. There's federal funds and other funds mix within both of those, within all three of those programs. As we look at 07-09, administration and education, federal funds are about $431,000, other funds $5.3 million, for a total of $5.8 million. Law enforcement federal funds $3.8 million, other funds $9.8 million, for a total law enforcement expenditure of $13.7 million. And in facilities, federal funds of 4.2, which is up significantly from the 1.8 we had in the current budget cycle. So that's one of the big drivers, again, that we mentioned earlier, and other funds at just a little over $10 million, up from 9.2, which is the $750,000 in that one decision package, for total facilities expenditure of 14.3. So the facilities being in blue, you can see a fairly significant jump in facilities over the current budget estimate, and that largely is that federal fund shift. The increase in the red, the law enforcement, again, is primarily the increase in federal funds, and the administration, slight increase, and some of that is federal funds in one of the packages. That's kind of a high-level view of it, and we get into some more detail of it. This is another recap of how it comes out overall. Our administration and education component is 17% of our overall budget. Law enforcement, 41%, primarily through contracts to counties and state police, and then facilities at 42%. So those two programs balance out fairly well in terms of the amount of attention that we're providing to law enforcement, as well as facilities and then administration and education. So all told, about 83% or more of our budget is going back out to provide direct services to people in the way of more facilities or on water patrol. Not very much of it's being kept in terms of what someone might consider overhead or administration. And even within the administration component, there's a number of services that are provided within that. So, delving a little deeper into the detail, governor's recommended budget for administration and education, this is how it was built. Base at $5.1 million. Their PIX adjustment of $278,000. There's a non-essential, non-PIX and vacancy factor taken out. And then an inflation factor built in. So the essential budget level is $5.5 million. And then we have three policy option packages. An increase in federal funds for safety and education. Package 102 to provide some services and supply support for the Clean Marina program. And then package 103, which is funding the cost of a number of position reclassifications that were studied by DAS and reviewed during the interim and authorized at a higher level. So that's package 103. So the packages total $300,000 within the administration education program area, bringing our overall budget request to 5.8 and 23 FTE. There's no change in number of positions within that. And moving to the next one, that we built the law enforcement budget. Base is $12.5 million, 4.8 FTE. Again, we had the PIX adjustment, take out vacancy factor, add in inflation and state government service charges of $375,000 to come up with an essential budget level of just over $13 million, no change in positions. And then we have policy package 101, which is Coast Guard grants to pass through to local governments, $667,000. And then package 103, which is, again, similar to 103. This is some positions that were reviewed, $9,000. Packages total $677,000 for an overall budget of $13.7 million in the law enforcement field. And then facilities base at just a little over $12 million, 10.33 positions. Again, we do the PIX adjustments, vacancy factors, phase out. This is where the $750,000 that was approved last time for facilities is taken out because it was a one-time, used as a one-time, so we take it out. And we add back in inflation and state government service charges for a base or an essential budget level of 11.8. And then we have four packages of facilities. The big program with federal funds, $1.4 million. The grant carry forward that I mentioned earlier to give us some limitation to carry projects that bridge one biennium into another, $250,000. Package 303, which is our position reclasses that we've done within the facility program area, $71,000. And then package 304, which restores this phase out and it brings back the facility enhancements at $750,000. Packages total $2.4 million for a total of $14.3 million and again 10.3 FTE. This portrays the. Are there any questions on what I did on the other part, but kind of at high level?
Questions? This one? I don't see any.
I'll move forward and discuss up our policy packages. And these are just in number orders. The package 101 is ranked first. This is Coast Guard federal funds increase for boating safety programs. We continue some of our life jacket campaigns and other things, $107,000. The Clean Marina is 102. This is ranked fourth. This is S&S to augment the Clean Marina program, which was started last biennium. We received a position, but we didn't receive any S&S. And so this is service and supply funding to carry that program out. We've got a number of marinas pledged around the state. This will provide travel support, funding for incentives, cleanup kits, and things like that to help them participate and comply with our goal of Clean Marina program. Package 103 is the position reclasses, is ranked 8th. This is several positions that were reviewed by the DAS Human Resources Division and were reclassified $146,000. Then the law enforcement, increasing federal funds for marine law enforcement, this ranked 2nd, $667,000, increases our field efforts in law enforcement. The position reclasses in the law enforcement program, $9,000, that ranked 9th, increasing our big funds, federal funds, $1.4 million, that ranked 3rd, increasing other funds for the carry forward, ranked 5th, at $250,000. The facility reclasses were 7th, ranked 7th, at $700,000, and the statewide facility enhancement, $750,000, ranked 6th.
Any questions from the committee at this time?
Moves into another area. So,
seeing none, I guess we can move into quality improvement and efficiency.
Well, this is new for this year, so we've taken a stab at this, and I presented a little bit of this in our overview because we look at it as some of the good things that we're doing. In terms of quality improvements and efficiency concepts, we're always looking for ways to improve our customer service to our boaters. RegLine, which is our online renewal of boat registrations, is one of the ways that we've been doing that. It started as a pilot in 2002-2003 and has grown since then. Our best year was in 2004-05. We did 16,000 online renewals, which was 22% of the renewals that year. Last year it dropped off because there was some downtime as that program was shifted from the provider we had. The state moved to EDS in Texas, and you know, so we had a bit of downtime in the transition. And it's transitioning again to a new provider now, but it's back up and running. And so far this year, we've done 7,500 renewals online, and that's ahead of last year's count by 21%. So we think once we get a stable platform for that, it'll be better, and there'll be no fees associated with this for customers, so that's another plus with that. And we hope to grow the online use of that to avoid the use of agents and to avoid any kind of delays for people that want to get their renewal the day before they go boating. They can get online, they can do it right now and print on temporary and go. We're in the process of populating or putting online registration forms for our agents, which would have self-populating data from our database. So they could enter the customer OR number, for example. It would populate that form with the information from our database, and we think we're going to see fewer errors. It's going to speed the transactions for the agents and populate it with the data that's already in the system. So that will help help the agents and customers with better speed and accuracy. We've got a number of online databases that we've moved out for authorized users to be able to access our database. We used to get calls all the time from ports and marinas. You know who owns this boat? You know, they're here in our slip, and it faxes, and we'd have to fax back and forth. It's online now. They can look up the person's information if they're an authorized user 24/7. So that's been an improvement. Likewise, our outfitter guide database is available for federal agencies or law enforcement to access 24/7. And so those are some of the improvements that we're making in our registration business services area. We're expanding our use of volunteers. We have 1.5 FTEs right now in the last year that we got volunteer support for our mandatory education program and boating safety. We just did the Portland Boat Show, gave out thousands of life jackets for kids there and had volunteers for the most part doing that along with our staff. So that's been a big plus. I mentioned our contracting out of support for breath testing equipment. That saving is $40,000 a year. We have done some shifting within our marine law enforcement training program to kind of combine and tighten up the time involved there. We've saved over 1,000 hours a year at a savings of over $62,000 for that by doing some reprogramming. We're using sustainable designs in our facility program, recycled materials to build our boating facilities. And then I don't know that this is an efficiency concept, but I think it reflects on the quality of what we're doing in that we've received a number of awards from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and others for the quality of designs that we're using in our boating facilities program. Kind of hard to put a measurement on that, but I don't think we'd be getting the awards if we weren't doing something right. So I put it in the category of things that you must be doing right. So that takes us to the end.
Thank you very much. Mr. Don Heffner, is there anything additional that you'd like to present? Then I'd make a request to the committee that we will start right on time tomorrow. I don't know if anybody will be here to testify, but if there's a few people to testify, it'd be good if we had a quorum. And we will adjourn. And it's been an excellent presentation, and we will, if you have any more questions tomorrow, we can address those, but I would not anticipate a full meeting tomorrow, but I'd ask that people be here at 8:30, and we might be able to be done by 9 o'clock, if we're lucky. We have nothing else on the agenda.
We do not.
We do not.
Well, we do have a federal grant.
Well, we do have a federal grant tomorrow. Yes. Okay, so... Right. And so we'll need a quorum tomorrow to pass it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any final questions? Thank you very much for the presentation, and we will see you tomorrow morning. We're done.